Okay, Shalom Uvracha. Welcome back to our Frun Family Shir, a congregation hosted by Congregation Shaar Tefillah. As always, we are on the Zecher, and the Yidui Nishmas, Merim Frun, Merim Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah HaLasham. Hashem should continue to merit an Aliyah Latova, as well as a Zechira Latova, and the Zechus of the Divrei Torah that we will share together this evening. And we thank the Frun family very much for their unwavering commitment, truly. Stellar, unwavering, beautiful dedication and commitment to this Shir Chabura, Zecher Nishmas, their mother, Allah HaShalom. So it's coming after Chanukah. I don't feel like it's Chanukah. Maybe I'm Miktana Yamana. It's very possible. I don't feel like it's Chanukah. I'm just being very honest. I have to work on it. Chanukah's in a week. Well, I know it's Wednesday night, a week and a day, so I thought it would be appropriate, maybe it'll help me, or maybe it'll help you too, to realize that in Yanni Diomach, as I'll say, Shloshim Yom Kodam Chag, 30 days before the Chag, you start to talk about Yanni Diomach. So we're 1 week Kodam Chag. So I think it would be appropriate to start talking about Chanukah. I'm going to be basing the shir on a piece from Rabbi Joseph B. Salvechek, the Rav, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, a very, very beautiful piece from the Sefer. It's called Days of Deliverance, Essays on Purim and Chanukah. So we know that Chanukah is coming up. You know, I heard last week after I spoke, it made a big impression on me how she said it. Mrs. Chaya Levine spoke after I spoke when I was leaving my shir. I realized, I said, what's going on? They said, oh, there's another speaker after you. So I said, who's the other speaker? I told you this last week. So I said, Ms. Chaya Levine, so did I tell you what she said about the caves and who would join the army? Yes. So it made such an impression on me, like how many of us would join the army, you know, by the rabbis, and how many would run to the caves? And I think it really obviously made a big impression on me, because you see, I was going to start to repeat it. So let's talk about Chanukah. So the Gemara tells us, I'm starting with Rav Salvechek, Megillas Tainis has been annulled. But Chanukah is different because there was a public demonstration of God's miracle. Seches Rosh Hashanah 18b. Chanukah is different because there was a public demonstration of Hashem's miracle. My brother came back from Eretz Yisrael this morning. But the day he left, Monday, he left Tuesday night. Monday morning, he was visiting soldiers in the hospital. He visited soldiers last Thursday, and he visited this past Monday morning as well, different soldiers. And he was with one of the soldiers. And he said that the soldier said, it's Pirsume Nisa, to tell people I am alive. He's a young father. He has three children. His third child was actually born a boy, a bris, while he was in Gaza. And they were in a house in Gaza. And an RPG hit the house or the floor where they were on, I'm not sure. He fell three floors. My brother said to us, he's like, this isn't a Misa that went 10 times. He's like, I'm talking to the soldier. His name is Eitan Ben Devora, Zeschus for Refuah Shleima. He just had his third child while he was in the Gaza Strip. He fell three floors. He broke his back. He broke his arm. Those are two injuries that I know. Besides for that, he had terrorists shooting at him within 5 meters. Five terrorists within 5 meters. He said he had continued to shoot. He said, it's Pirsume Nisa to tell people. I said to my brother, while he was by his bedside, he said to my brother, it's Pirsume Nisa, it's publicizing, it's a mitzvah to publicize the miracle that I'm alive. My brother said, you don't realize the soldiers see so many nisim. He said, when you talk to them, he's like, I'm talking about Chiloni soldiers. My brother wrote, this isn't something that you heard 10 times removed. He said, the Chiloni soldiers are saying it is a nace that we are alive. He says, they realize it's mamash nisim, that so many of them are saying we shouldn't be here, we should be dead. It's a miracle that we are alive. So there's a mitzvah to be mefarsim, a nace. What?
When did what happen?
At what point in the war? I'm not sure. He was visiting the soldiers in the hospital. I mean, he was visiting them Monday morning, Thursday and Monday. So at some point from October to 7th to now, I don't know exactly at what point these soldiers sustained their injuries. I have a whole list at home of soldiers' names, the ones that my brother actually stood by and visited. So that's the Maisa, that there is a mitzvah to be mefarsim when there's a miracle. So Chanukah, Seichas Alma, Seichas Rosh Hashanah, is different. It cannot be annulled because there's a public demonstration of God's miracle. Chanukah is celebrated today. And that is a sign that the holiday, as well as the commemoration of God's miracles belongs to a group of Jewish holidays that have Pesach as their pinnacle. So Pesach is the epicenter of these holidays. Why? They're based on an everlasting value. Even though Hanukkah is not Doraisa, the only allusion, as far as I know, that's in the Torah, the allusion. I was going to say the only, but then there's one also in Vayetze. The allusion to Hanukkah, at least in the Torah text, is that the 25th word of Torah is Or. If you count the words that I just said, or is the 25th word? Perak Al Pasuk Gimel of Sefer Bereishis. So, the 25th word is R, and Hanukkah falls out. Chanu Chafei. They rested on the 25th. We light the candles that bring R on the 25th. So, in the Tarsha Bichtav, we have an allusion to Hanukkah. Also, in last week's Parsha, Yaakov Avinu, and Parsha's Vayetze. No, this week's Parsha, Vayishlach. Not last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha. And the Peruch Lamed Beis. It's not last week, it's this week. He goes back across the river Yabuk for the Pachim Kitanim. Some
the
little.
Tupperwares if you're in the Olami house.
What?
The Tupperwares if you're in the Olami
house. The Tupperwares?
That's what your class
I don't remember. What did they ask me? I don't even remember. You remember. What did they say?
When you
talked about Pachim time, they want to know if it's Tupperware.
The girls were like, oh, you went back for Tupperware.
I don't even remember that. So he went back for Pachim Tanim, and we know the Gemara tells him Secha Shabbos Chof Al Beis that when the Chashmonaim came, Badku Velo Matsu Al Pach Echad Shal Shemen Shai Munach B'Chosmo Shal Kosh Baruch Hu, that Yaakov went back for Pachim Tanim when the Beis Hamikdash was freed from the Syrian Greeks. And the Kohanim came back, and they checked, they found one Pach Shemen. So we do have a number of allusions in Torah Shebechtav as well, Torah Shebal Pen, Chumash to Chanukah, but Lamaisa, it's not a mitzvah d'oraisa at all, it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. However, it's related to Pesach because these Yomim Tovim have an everlasting value, which no political destruction or military downfall can erase. It's helpful to remember that now. However, we are obviously in a time of destruction, and October 7th was a tremendous downfall. Forget militarily, just in terms of loss of life. My brother visited the afternoon they left with families who lost Rahman al-Son children. They were showing them pictures of their children. Akhtaman man is a florist who was showing them pictures of a son. Visited one family where two brothers were killed. So it's certainly a downfall in terms of loss of life, and it is a tremendous destruction. However, there's everlasting value, and that's why we celebrate Yom Tov of Chanukah. It's not something that happened. It doesn't just represent what happened to the Maccabim at that time. It represents what is happening to us now and the victory that will come, and that's a mitzvah to be mefarsim. It is said that at one Pesach Seder, Rav Menachem Mendel Mikotsk, offered an answer to a well-known question. The Shulchan Aruch asks, no, the Shulchan Aruch insists that we take an egg as the chagiga. The egg on the Seder plate represents a Korban Chagiga. There was the Korban Pasach and the Korban Chagiga. So we have the Zerah for the Korban Pasach and we have the Beitzer for the Korban Chagiga. Why do we not follow the Rambam's position? The Rambam, on the other hand, holds that we should use a type of meat as a symbol of the Korban Chagiga. But no, the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, says no, we don't hold like the Rambam, who preceded him by about 200 years. We don't hold like the Rambam. We hold that we use an egg. Why? An egg, Rav Menachem Mendel Mikotsk says as follows. It has two components. Firstly, it itself is a good food. It's a source of protein that's easy to digest. But apart from its dietary importance, egg is a higher component. In the egg lies a future life. It is the mysterious source of a future creation. Pesach has these two components, represented by the egg. It celebrates an amazing victory over Paro and the freeing of the slaves. But concealed within the deliverance from, that's like the protein, the nourishment, the sustain, the people were sustained, they were freed, they got out, they had new life. But concealed within the delivery from Egypt lies the eternity of Am Yisrael, the eternal hope that will be realized in the future redemption. By the way, relates to this week's parasha as well, by Yeshach, Paraklamet Hey, because Rachel dies, Atikash Belidata, she is struggling in her childbirth. Atomer La Hamayades, and the midwife says, Al Tiri, Gamze Yelach Ben, don't be afraid, this will also be a son, Vatahi Betseis Nafsha, Vatamas. Her soul leaves her, and she's dying. Atikashmo Ben Oni, she calls his name Ben Oni, Aviv Karol Ben Yamin, buries her in Kevar Rachel. But the Navi Yirmiyahu tells us in Parak Lamed Aleph, beginning in Pasuk Yod Dalet, Sefer Yirmiyahu, Rachel Imenu, who dies in this week's parasha. What does he say? What's the last thing I just read to you? Pesach represents the eternal hope that will be realized in the future redemption. If you look in the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, he's referring to a future time where there will be rejoicing and dancing and grain and wine and produce. And Rachel is crying. Because Baruch Hu says, "Mini kolich mi bechi, einaich mi dima." Hold your voice back from crying, your eyes from tears. Ki yesh schar lepulateich v'yesh tikva acharitech. There is reward for your effort. What effort? That she's crying. She never stops crying for her children. And there is hope for the end. Two promises. V'shavu banam v'gvulam v'shavu me'aretz oyif. Pesach represents a hope that will be raised in the future redemption. And that word hope, tikva, is mentioned in Yirmiyahu's prophecy by Rachel in regard to the future redemption. The egg, therefore, symbolizes not only the Pesach of Egypt, the temporary redemption. In other words, the people left Egypt and it was over. It also symbolizes generations to come, the future redemption, the everlasting meaning of redemption. I think perhaps an egg is also used, famous word on the egg, because an egg begins off soft. But the harder, the longer you cook it and you boil it, in other words, you subject it to boiling hot temperatures, it's not so, like, I can't imagine it's pleasant for the egg to be in the boiling water. Obviously, we're using a metaphor because I don't think the egg cares if it's in the boiling water. But paradoxically, the longer it is under suffering, intolerable conditions, the harder, the stronger it becomes. And that is also another symbolism of Kal Yisrael, that instead of dissipating, disappearing, and becoming weak in Galus, the longer, Rachmana Litzlan, it should end immediately. Kal Yisrael has a tenacity of spirit, but does not diminish, despite being boiled, sometimes quite literally. Someone sent me something, I thought it was just tremendous. I have a friend who is in Eretz Yisrael now. And in Shalva is, maybe some of you saw this on my status, but it's just, it ties into this idea of the tenacity and the eternity of Kal Yisrael. And the Rav is saying that Pesach is the starting point of the Yamim Tovim that we celebrate that symbolizes eternity of Kal Yisrael. And Chanukah, even though it is not a mitzvah de'oraisa, it is rather a Yom Tov de'Rabbanan, symbolizes within it this continuity that begins on Pesach, this idea of the eternity. And it's a mitzvah to be mefarsim. It is a everlasting value. So my friend, she was in Shalva. I'm sure you've heard of Shalva, the center for special needs individuals, the Shalva band, the Shalva cafe. I've never been to the cafe. I don't know why. I should really go. Anyway, this is posted in Shalva. It's a poem by Shlomit Kohen Asif. Parpar ben yom, if you saw it in my status, okay, you'll hear it there. Parpar ben yom, sha'al parpar ben yomayim. A butterfly of 1 day old asked a butterfly of 2 days old, ad eise gavoa afot haknafayim, until what height, how high do your wings take you? Ana parpar ben yomayim le parpar ben yom. The parpar of 2 days old answered the butterfly of 1 day old, a height that you can fly is how high you dream. I'm going to read it now in the Hebrew without interrupting, and then I'll say it in the English. The poem is called Gvoa Hachalom. Parpar ben yom shal parpar ben yomayim. Ad eise gvoa afat haknafayim. Ana parpar ben yomayim lu parpar ben yom. Gvoa haknafayim hu gvoa hachalom. A butterfly 1 day old asked a butterfly 2 days old, how high can your wings take you? How high can we actually fly? The butterfly 2 days old said to the butterfly 1 day old, the height that you can fly is the height of your dreams. It's not an accident that Yaakov dreams, Yosef dreams, and the Maccabim also dreamed. They dreamed of being freed from oppression. And if you look statistically at their dream, just like the brother said to Yosef, are you crazy? That's not exactly what they said. Hamashal timshal banu, hamaloch timloch aleinu. What are you thinking? Even his father chastised him. You think mother and I will come bow down to you? Yaakov also dreamed. His dreams went all the way up to Shemayim. What is the glass ceiling that we impose for ourselves? And the Maccabim also dreamed. They dreamed of spiritual freedom. And again, like Mrs. Chayavin told me, would you join the few rabbis in the army or would you run to the caves? I would run to the caves. but they believed that they could, and so they did. How far do these wings take you? Said Parpar Ben Yom to Parpar Ben Yomai. He said, you know how far they take you? They take you as far as you think you can go. Rav Nassan Tzvi Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Kodesh Levracha, in the Art School biography, which is tremendous, if you ever read it, it's mamish kedai to read. So, movement, he was very physically incapacitated due to severe Parkinson's. It's very, very difficult for him. So if he was having a very difficult day and he had to go to the yeshiva, he would say, I just have to go to my door of the apartment. Not I have to walk from here to yeshiva, just to the door. Now when he would make it to the door, he would say, I just have to walk to the elevator. And then after he got down, he would say, I just have to cross the street. And then he would say, I just have to make it to the door of the yeshiva. Now I just have to make it to the base madrash, and I just have to make it to the shtender until he made it all the way where he had to go. What is Chanukah? Chanukah is everlasting symbol of our redemption. It's all encapsulated in the Yom Tov of Pesach. But Rav is saying, not the limited Pesach of Vadaminu Parab Mitzrayim and we left, but it represents for the future of Knesset Yisrael. If the halacha, says Rav Salvechik, chose to establish Chanukah as a holiday to be observed, whether the Beis HaMikdash stands or not, it is a sign that Chanukah exists for generations, like Pesach. And therefore, quote, Chanukah holds within it the secret of the eternity of Israel. It's also in this week's parasha that we are renamed Yisrael. We are not called the B'nai Avram or the B'nai Yitzchak, and we're not even called the B'nai Yaakov. We are called the B'nai Israel. We are Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Torah Yisrael. Why is he renamed Yisrael? It all ties into the same idea, because the angel is fighting with him the whole night. They kicked up dust up to the Kisei HaKavod. And the angel refused to give up until this morning dawn. And Yaakov was in fight. He just came out of working for Laban. He's not a warrior. And he doesn't give up. The angel sees that he, the angel, cannot overcome Yaakov. He says, he punches him in the thigh bone. Yaakov says, I'm not going to send you to give me a bracha. But what's a bracha? Mashimcha. What is your name? He says, Yaakov. Lo yemar od shimcha Yaakov ki im Yisrael. This is when we were named Yisrael. These parshios are always read with my Chanukah, because Yosef, the Chanukah Jew, is always read. His story is always Chanukah. And this is the parsha right before the story of Yosef. So that means it's always read right before Chanukah. Ki sarisa im elokim va'anashim va'tucha. Because you have striven, you have wrestled in the spiritual enemies, elokim, those who want to spiritually destroy us, v'im anashim, those who physically want to destroy us, va'tucha. Somehow Kal Yisrael is still here. And therefore, Chanukah exists for generations because it holds within it the secret of the eternity of Israel. The Chanukah of political freedom, so popular with all, was annulled long ago with the destruction of the Temple. Now, there's a political freedom that they regained 200 years of sovereignty or so before the destruction of Bayi Sheni. That political freedom is long gone. It's smoking in the dust of the burnt house on the destroyed rocks of Churban Bayi Sheni that you can still see in archaeological sites around the Temple Mount. Like all other holidays of the Second Temple era that were mentioned in Megillas Tani, so remember we began by saying Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that Megillas Tani says been annulled. There were apparently other Yomim Tovim in the time of Bayi Sheni that they celebrated. We do not have them anymore. Which one is still around? Chanukah. Now, it can't be we're celebrating the political freedom of Chanukah, because what happened to the political freedom of Chanukah in 70 Common Era when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? That political freedom was also destroyed. It would seem then that the greatness of Chanukah consists not so much in the importance of miracles that occurred by Yamim Haheim in the days of Yore, Y-O-R-E. It's not that we're celebrating Shasan Nisim Avsenu by Yamim Haheim over 2,000 years ago, but more importantly, Bizman Hazeh in our times. In the meaning of the ancient miracle for the here and now, which no destruction can annul or diminish. So we need a lot of chizuk in this area. We need to remember very, very clearly that Chanukah represents that no destruction can annul or diminish the miracles of Bizman Hazeh, the eternity of Am Yisrael, and that's what Chanukah represents. Actually, says the Rav, there is a great general misconception about the motivation for the Chashmonai uprising. excuse me, the revolt of Matisyahu, the Kohen Gadol, and his sons was not a response to political pressure. We usually think it's a response to political pressure. The Syrian Greeks had couldn't take it anymore. But the Rav actually says, from the time of Ezra, when they came back, until the time of Matisyahu, I'm not a historian at all. The kingdom of Israel had never been politically independent. That's very interesting. So it was so different under the Syrian Greeks. That's what the Rav is now going to address. In other words, if they have not been politically independent for the entire time period of Bayesheni, then why under the Maccabim did they decide to revolt against the Syrian Greeks, the Yavanim? What was the problem? From the time of Ezra, who brought the people back, who brought the second Aliyah, if you will, back on the building of the Beis HaMikdash, until that of Matisyahu, the Kohen Gadol, the kingdom of Israel had never been politically independent. In the beginning, it was under the influence of Persia, then Egypt, then Alexander the Great Empire, and then after his death, it came under Syrian Greek sovereignty. So this wasn't a new thing that they were being ruled by foreign rulers. If the only issue, says Rav, was political sovereignty, if that was the problem, the revolt would never have happened. It wasn't that they were under foreign dominion. They had been under foreign dominion the entire time of Bayesheni. The Jews would have continued to accept their suffering with love and would have waited for the eventual complete redemption. That's what the Rav says. They would not have taken action. He writes, quote, they would have continued to accept their suffering with love, Yisur Me'ahava, and they would have waited with patience until the eventual complete redemption. We won't take matters into our own hands. We're going to wait. So it wasn't political motivation that caused them to fight. The conflict with the Greeks was a different matter entirely. The Greeks hated the Jews' spiritual essence. They hated their worldview, their peculiarity, their being different. In short, they hated their Torah. Ms. Chayavin said something very interesting. I don't believe I told this to you. It relates to this idea. It's not that the Greeks wanted to just politically subjugate the Jews, you know, pay more taxes, whatever, be part of our empire. They were anti their entire spiritual essence. That means they're anti the interior of the Jew. She said something so interesting. She said, why were they so, I do not think I told you this, why were they so interested in defiling the oil? The Gemara says, the Gemara that I quote before in Shabbos Chaf Aleph, Kishenichnusu Yevanim Lehechal, Timu es Kol Hashmarim. The Gemara, it's not that, in other words, you understand what the Gemara is saying, I never thought of this question until she pointed it out. It's not that in the midst of ransacking the Beis HaMikdash, also the oils got defiled. That's not what the Gemara says. Kishenichnusu Yevanim Lehechal, Timu es Kol Hashmarim. In other words, what did they do? They went out of their way to defile all the oil. It's not that they were, you know, I don't know, bringing a Avodah Zarah and making a big mess and spreading confetti and eating in there, and the oil happened to be defiled. They were dafka going out of their way to defile the oil. What's the problem with the oil? What does it represent? So she said, how do you get oil? Oil is the internal essence of the olive.
The olive.
The olive is the external fruit, but in order to extract the oil, you need to squeeze to derive what's inside. It's the internality. When the Torah tells us, Devarim Chas Chas, about the Shivat Aminim, Eretz Chitos, Orva, Gefnutein, Verimon, Eretz Zeit Shemen, it doesn't say Eretz Zeitim, Udvash. Zeit Shemen. That's how the Torah lists the Shivat Aminim. By dvash, we need chazal to darshan, that we're not talking about dvash dvarim, but rather dvash tamarim. Okay. But by olives, it specifically says zeit shemen, the oil from olives, because how do you get the olive oil? You have to squeeze the olive. The oil is what's internal. She said the Greeks were fighting against the internal beauty, the internal wealth, the internal richness of Klal Yisrael. The olive needs to be pressed to extract what's inside. That represents the Jewish neshama. And in fact, when it comes to the Chanukiah, when it comes to lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, Baal Oscha, and in Baal Oscha, it needs to be Shemazai Zach. It needs to be pure olive oil. So Rashi says, what is Shemazai Zach? And that's why that's the most muhudar material for lighting our menorah. Shemen Zayis Zach is pure olive oil. So Rashi explains, quoting the Gemara, that were the Midrash or the Mishnah. When you press the olive, the first is the purest, the first extraction. That is kosher the menorah. When I talk about menorah, by the way, I'm talking about the menorah that they lit in the Mishkan Sas Beit HaMikdash every night. The first extraction is kosher the menorah. The second extraction will have some sediment of the olives in it. Because once you press the food hard enough, what's going to happen? You're not just going to get, like, think about orange juice, with pulp or without pulp, okay? What's going to happen when you press the olives is you're going to get some of the piece of the olive in the fruit. If you crush it hard enough, you're not just going to get the oil, you're going to get olives. That's kosher l'menachos for the mincha offerings, but the flour offerings that were drizzled with oil and mixed with oil, belula b'shemen. So the second extraction is kosher l'menachos and pasul l'menorah. Only the first extraction is kosher for menorah. So that really drives home the point that what they wanted to destroy was the pure essence of Klal Yisrael. And that's why Mizrachi Levin said, Shaticha, that they went after the olive oil. Because it's not external. It's not the jar of olives. It's not the olives. It's the shemen that comes from the olive. And what is that? The internality of Klal Yisrael. And just like you light it to get a flame, Ner Hashem, Nishmas Adam. The candle of God is the soul of man. So therefore, Rav Soloveitchik says, this isn't about political battles, because they have not been politically independent the entire time of Bayu Sheni. If the only issue had been political sovereignty, we want to win politically over our enemies, the revolt would never have broken out. The Jews would have continued to accept the Yisur and Me'ahava. They would have waited for complete redemption. We're not going to do anything. This is what Hashem wants. We're under political subjugation. As long as we can internally allow our neshamos to shine and thereby practice our religion, Torah, mitzvos, yahadus, tefillah, we're not going to fight back. The conflict, however, with the Greeks was a different matter entirely. The Greeks hated the spiritual essence of Am Yisrael. They hated their worldview. They hated that they were peculiar. They were different. In short, quote, they hated Torah. The motive for their hatred was the same as Haman's. What did Haman say? Yeshnam am echon mefuzer and mufarad bein amin, but the same shonos mikol am. Their laws, their religion, their practices are different. They depart from the laws of the king, he said to Achashverosh, to keep their own laws. Dasei melech einu mosim. Therefore, the Greeks were not satisfied with political pressure. They began to meddle with the intimate realm of human life, the Jewish people's connection to God, and began to conduct their battle on a new ground entirely. The battle was now the battle for religion. They moved the battle from the battlefield to the Jewish home. They wanted to enter the realm of intimate human life. They wanted to enter the realm of severing our connection to the Ribon Sha'olam. And now they moved to a new ground, and that was the ground of religion. It was this persecution of religion that distressed the Hashmonaim and fanned the flames, I don't know if pun is intended or not, of battle. Ties in perfectly to what she said. They daf go in after. Why did they take their time to open all the jugs and defile the oil? They have nothing better to do. Who cares? They wanted to demonstrate that they were defiling, or so they thought they would be able to defile, the pure essence of Am Yisrael. Our sages put it this way as well. What is the reason for Chanukah? Ma'i Chanukah? When the Greeks entered the sanctuary, I'm not joking, it's not a joke, you can see where the Rav is up to. He now quotes exactly this line that we're talking about. I'm not joking. Ma'i Chanukah? What is Chanukah? Kishenichnesu Yevanim Lehechal, Timu Eskal Shmanim. You can look at Days of Deliverance, bottom of page 131 to 132, Kwadim Esachar Shabbos, Chav Alav Amud Beis. The reason for the great revolt was the Greeks entering the sanctuary. They entered the Jewish temple. They defied all the oils. Well, I mean, he does not give the part that Mizrachi Levin explained, but they defied the oil. They brought pagan culture, and they wanted to weaken the holiness of Am Yisrael. They wanted to weaken Shabbos, laws of modesty, and family purity. This is one realm of the Greek aim, which is not as well known. They wanted no Shabbos, no Rosh Chodesh, no Milah, and no Torah. But another, it's an easy way to remember that, I've told you this for sure before, Perek Lamed of Tehillim, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid, is Mashir Chanukah Sabai. So here we have allusion to Chanukah from Ketuvim. Aromimcha Hashem ki dilisani v'lo simachti lo simachta oyvayli. Mizmar Shir, a song of a song. Chanukah Sabai to David. We're going to talk about something about really, so on the drash, the inauguration of the house for David. But here we're talking about Chanukah. Aromimcha Hashem ki dilisani, I will laud you, I will raise you up. So speak, I will glorify you, God. You've raised me from poverty. V'lo simachta oyvayli. I've said this many times. Say it every year. So Mrs. Bobby Feiner shared with me, and the name of Rav Rafael Pelkowitz from the right, so right, that was, yeah? So his son is Dr. David Pelkowitz. Yeah, so Rav Rafael Pelkowitz shared many, many years ago. Mrs. Bobby Feiner told me a number of years ago, Simachta oivai, that you did not allow my enemy just to rejoice over me, stands for Shabbos, Mila, Chodesh, and Torah. Simachta, it's Kapitel Lamed of Tehillim, Sukkim Aleph through Beis. Shabbos, Mila, Chodesh, and Torah.
Exact same thing that the Ivanov were trying to abolish.
Correct. That's exactly right. That's exactly the point. V'lo simachta oyvayli. You did not allow my enemies to rejoice over me. How would they have rejoiced if they would have destroyed Shabbos, which they couldn't never do, but they thought they could. If they destroyed Mila, destroyed Rosh Chodesh, and destroyed Torah. Another aspect of what the Greeks wanted to destroy was Taras HaMashpacha and modesty, and the Rav touches upon it here, which also, by the way, ties in so much to internal, because that is something that takes place internally in the Jewish home. Once again, a sign that they wanted to destroy was internal.
And that's why the women are part of this.
What?
That's why we are part of the mitzvah, because they were trying to attack the women.
That's why we are. Oh, that's why we're part of the mitzvah. Afhein ha'yudo sonis.
The
war broke out because of the temple. In other words, because they defiled the mikdash, kodesh. They defiled all that was kodesh, not because of political freedom. This same history, says Rav Soloveitchik, is what we recount in Al Nisim prayer. When the evil kingdom of Malchus Yavan Harasha amda al amcha Yisrael, lashkicham Torah secha, ulaha'avira michukei ritzonecha. When the evil kingdom of Greece rose up against your people to make them forget your Torah, to force them to transgress your will as well. In other words, lahavira michukecha, lahavira michukei ritzonecha. In other words, they wanted us, what do we even say in Al Nisim? Lahashkicham Torah secha, lahavira michukei ritzonecha. We're not talking about that politically they subjugate us. In Al Nisim prayer, we're saying that their whole aim was that we should forget Torah. How many times have they tried? So many times. They think they could destroy Shabbos. They think they could destroy our connection to Torah. They think they could destroy the internal pure drop of the Jewish neshama. It's in this week's parasha also that when Yaakov meets Esav, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Dalet and Bereishis, Esav's so happy to meet him. The hundreds of animals was a great bribe, and the tefillah worked, and splitting up the camp, and Yaakov is saved. Esav is so happy. Vayaratz Esav v'kraso, he's running to meet him. And he kisses him and he hugs him. And there are dots over Vayishakehu. He kisses him. I was just sharing this with my son the other day.
Why?
What? So why are there dots over Vayishakehu? That's Akasha. There are dots. Our Mesorah is that if you look in the Sefer Torah, there are dots over Vayishakehu. So why? So Asher brings two opinions. The first opinion is he wasn't a real kiss. He kissed him with not a full heart. It was like a half kiss. It was an external display. Because Esav really doesn't want to kiss Yaakov. But the second shot is that of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai teaches, Halachi b'yadua she'esav sona v'yaakov, aval, really Esav hates Yaakov. But this time, nichmu rachamav, his mercy was aroused, v'yashachay b'cholev, he kissed him with his whole heart. In other words, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, usually, why are there dots over the kiss? Usually, Esav hates Yaakov. That's a ironclad halacha. Halacha b'idua. It's a known. Everyone knows that. Who doesn't know halacha b'idua? Esav's son Yaakov. But this time, he actually kissed him with his whole heart. So the dots show that this kiss was a yotzim in a cloud. Usually, Esav hates Yaakov. This time, he happened to kiss him with his whole heart. But it is so significant. I was just sharing this with my son on Sunday night. It is so significant that it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai who teaches us this. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had to hide in a cave for 13 years Why? Because what did the Romans not want him to do? It wasn't about taxes. It wasn't about political sovereignty. It wasn't about minting coins. It was about Torah. Masechta Shabbos Lamed Gimel. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Elazar had to hide in the cave for 13 years. Why? Because first they were in the Beis Medrash. They were afraid after hiding in the Beis Medrash that if they arrest mother, mother will tell them where we are. So they went to a cave. It's not an accident. You understand? You can't look at the teaching of Halachi Vidua Sheisur Son Ele Yaakov. It's also who teaches us this halacha. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai knew this better than anyone, because he had to hide in the cave because they wanted to destroy what? Spiritual connection to Torah. And therefore, Chanukah represents the same idea. L'hashkicham Torah secha, u'l'ha'avira mechukei ritzonecha. They wanted us to forget Torah. Could you imagine how many enemies have come and gone who have made us try to forget Torah? Mm-hmm. Look at Klal Yisrael today.
Might be a different shear entirely, but how come in Al HaNisim, the first thing that we say is that they wanted us to forget Torah? But before you were saying that really the three things that they outlawed was Shabbos, Milah, and Kodesh.
Right.
Why is it that what they outlawed is not what we talk about first in Al HaNisim?
Torah encompasses everything. Lashkicham Torah Secha. Torah encompasses Rosh Chodesh. It's the first national mitzvah. Chodesh is Lechem Rosh Lashem Rishon Lechem Nechad Sheshan Shemos 12:2. First national mitzvah. Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is part of Torah. So Torah encompasses Rosh Chodesh. Mila Parshas Tazria Perik Yud Beis Vayikra Isha Ki Tazria V'yaldo Secha V'tuma Shivas Yamim. When a woman gives birth. V'yamashmini Yumal B'sar Alasav. So Bismila is encompassed in Torah. Mila is encompassed in Torah. Mila, Chodesh, what was the last one? Shabbos. Perek Beis, Pasuk Aleph. Eichul HaShemayim V'aretz V'chol Tzavaam. Shalom B'nei Yisrael, so Shabbos. So says Shabbos Adorsam, Shmos 31:16-17. So therefore, when you say Lashkicham Torah Secha, ergo, they wanted us to forget Mila. They wanted us to forget Torah. And they wanted us Mila, Shabbos, and Chodesh. It's all encompassed in Torah. So therefore, la ha'avira michukei ritzonechat, ha'aviram, aveira, to make us do aveiros, and to forget Torah encompasses all of those aspects. Furthermore, the Rambam writes, I did not look up the Rambam, it's Hilchos Chanukah, paragimah halacha aleph, unless there's a typo in the sefer, which happens more often than you would realize. Well, I'm telling you, that's why I'm saying, I did not look up the Rambam. So if it's a typo, it's not something I looked up. The Rambam says, in the end of the Second Temple era, when the kings of Greece decreed laws on Israel and annulled their customs and ways and did not allow them to engage in Torah study, then Israel was much aggrieved. Therefore, says the Rav, this being the case, the victory did not consist so much in political achievement. That was not really such a political achievement. It was temporary. First of all, they were not used to political sovereignty anyway. And second of all, how long did it last for? Until the destruction of the Second Temple? 150 years, 200 years, that was it. And we have not had political freedom since. It was not political achievement, it was religious freedom. Again, think of what Ms. Chaya Levine said about the olive. The oil comes from the internal part of the olive. And the purification of the temple, the rekindling of the eternal Jewish light. 25th word in the Torah is Or. And thereupon your children came into the sanctuary of your house and cleansed your temple and purified your sanctuary and kindled the lights v'liko neiros v'chatzos kodshacha. And they kindled the lights in your holy courtyard. It is true political freedom was achieved, but that was not the major point, and that's not what we commemorate. The political holiday was only a temporary Chanukah. There was a political holiday, it was temporary. So if we're only celebrating a political holiday, when there was Churban Bayis Sheni, what would happen to political holiday? Finished. The Chanukah for generations is a holiday of purifying the temple, of lighting the candles. And there, Rav Soloveitchik says, the courage of the Chashmonaim, this is, I knew when I prepared that we're going to continue this next week, but since we still have time, I'm going on, but I'm just telling you, this is going to be two parts. The courage of the Chashmonaim seems to stand in marked contrast to the subsequent image of the Jew. In other words, they were courageous. They were warriors. They made an army. Maccabees is also an acronym. Micha Mocha Be'elim Hashem. And they battled. The period following the destruction of the Second Temple, meaning post Churban Bayis Sheni, saw the first manifestation of the historical image of the diaspora Jew. The Jew of Chutzar, it's the Jew of Galus. The diaspora Jew who lived through inhumane persecution who lived through inhumane persecution, as well as attempts at mass conversions. Both of those represent both aims of the enemy. Inhumane persecution is the physical desire of the enemy to physically destroy us. A mass conversion or attempted mass conversion is the aim of the enemy to spiritually destroy us. The non-Jews did not understand the Jew at all. They looked at him as an eternal wanderer, bearing the curse of Cain. Na v'nad, you will be a fugitive and a wanderer, ba'aretz, in the earth. Even modern Jews, okay, you don't like this, just don't take it up with me. It's Days of Deliverance, page 133, I'm quoting. Even modern Jews, the enlightened Jews and the followers of secular Zionist movement, did not properly understand the traditional Jew and often blamed him for the wrongs of which he was innocent. There is a, I don't even like to say. The new Jew is always going to be able to fight back. The new Jew will always be powerful. We will never go to sheep like sheep to the slaughter. How can we say such a thing? It's a terrible thing to say. Says the Rav, even modern Jews, the enlightened Jews, and the followers of secular Zionist movement did not properly understand the traditional Jew and often blamed him for the wrongs of which he was innocent. Are Jews really cowards? Do we have an inferiority complex? Have we inherited nothing from our ancestors, Matisyahu and his sons? So obviously, clearly, we do not. That's not the Torah perspective. So what is the Torah perspective? Let us consider this question objectively. I'm out of time. Not this paragraph. There are two kinds of inferiority complexes. One kind of inferiority expresses itself in a feeling of political weakness and submissiveness. But now we're going back to the distinction between political sovereignty or political subjugation and spiritual sovereignty or spiritual subjugation. One kind of inferiority therefore expresses itself in a feeling of political weakness and submissiveness. The individual or the collective accepts that sometimes it must be servile, it must be in servitude, because why? It is weaker than the adversary. So if you are weaker than the adversary, and if a battle against the adversary is useless, then politically you are going to be subjugated to that enemy. The opposite of political inferiority is political pride and political self-awareness. It's a feeling of national pride, a striving for political freedom and self-worth. I think that history has shown us many times that that is a very dangerous pride before Mashiach comes. It is an illusion. It is a big, big illusion. We can never have complete political freedom, complete political self-worth, absolute political pride. No one can destroy us until Mashiach comes. It's a grave error, which history has shown us many times. It is a feeling of national pride, a striving for political freedom and self-worth, which tolerates neither injustice nor insult to the individual and to the collective. Listen. It's a feeling of national pride, striving for political freedom and self-worth. And this national pride and striving for political freedom tolerates neither injustice nor insult to the individual or to the collective. So what's the problem? This before Yemos HaMashiach. We cannot absolutely control if there will be injustice or insult to the individual or the collective, as we have brutally seed these past 8 weeks. Even if the persecuted one is in the minority and weaker than the enemy. There are proud people who always defend their political rights, even when they know they will lose the battle. They cannot be politically bound to others, and they regard every gesture of submissiveness as slavery or cowardice. It's very, very powerful. It's a dangerous philosophy for the Jew in Galus, because Galus will show us over and over that when we think we have achieved absolute political freedom, whether in foreign lands or in our own land, Galus is everywhere today. Today is Galus. Wherever you are, it's Galus. It's much better to be in Galus than Eretz Yisrael. I've not achieved that yet. Yivu v'mizrach v'anochi v'sof ma'araf. A galus is galus. We're in galus arvir. When we make the end goal of striving for political freedom, it is a myth that there will be neither injustice nor insult to the individual or to the collective. Because ultimately, as long as we are in galus, we are meshuvah to some degree or another to the umas ha'umam. We cannot absolutely control that political might, that military might. This attitude is that we cannot be politically bound to others. But you understand, until Mashiach comes, we will always be politically bound to others. And they regard every gesture of submissiveness as slavery or cowardice. So therefore, now we're going to stop. Ba'azav Hashem, I will mark where we are up to. And next week, which is today, I said it's Erev Chanukah, but next week it's Mamish Erev Chanukah. We will continue Ba'azor Hashem, Halavai, Mashiach should come before that. And this whole thing will be a moot point because we will be enjoying absolute spiritual freedom as well as the ultimate political freedom with Bin and Ba'i Shlishi. And we'll see the fulfillment of the Nevuah to Rachel Imenu, Nehi Bichi Tamumrim. However, Mini Kolich, Mi Bechi, Ve'enayich, Mi Dima. Veshavu me'aretz oyei veshavu banam legvulam halavai vishbizach tasiyah. We will continue next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. Kol tov and thank you to all.